immediately after recording. Literally, I mean 27 seconds after finishing the recording of Business Jazz podcast for this week, Roger Overall is desperately worried that he might have made a mistake. Right. You don't have to reveal what the mistake made, Roger, is, but you have a tendency to get very worried immediately after the podcast, I have to remark on.
I don't know what to say to that.
Hey, how did it go this week?
I thought it went well.
Did it?
I think so.
What did you like most this week?
What did I like most about this?
Something went well, come on.
I don't know, I just think it went smoothly. We had a cracking, almost literally cracking start with the fire here, which was just magnificent. A bit of ambience, I think I like that. The conversation flowed. Paul's adding another log to the fire now. Interestingly, Paul announced, I'm not sure if that was recorded or not beforehand, he announced that he was going to write all the interesting things that I said down in his notebook. I can report to you that he has written down...
The following is written down in three lines. Yeah, but I'm a poet, Roger. I think in haiku, right? Okay, so don't, you know, if you're going to simply measure this in terms of... Roger used three words during the podcast this week, which are dynamite words, and if you explode them, you'll get a lot of value in your life. One of them is know. You want an audience to know you. You want an human being opposite you to know you. Secondly, you want them to like you. And thirdly, you want them to trust you, and he hasn't made up this model himself. He's actually quoting Ivan Misner, Business Networking International.
I'm not sure he even made it up.
All right.
I'm not sure where it comes from. He may well have done. I'm not saying he didn't.
Well, whoever invented the very simple model that you want your audience or the person you're talking to know you in the first place, to like you in the second place, because you can't like the person without knowing them, and thirdly, trust comes as a result of knowledge, and liking builds trust. And on the basis of those three things, somebody will refer business to you.
And you need all three of them. If one is missing, if the trust is missing, they're not going to refer you.
So how dare you say I didn't make notes of your most interesting content this week?
You think you said something else.
Tell me something else you said this week that you think I should have written down.
I have no idea what I've just said. Do you remember what you just said in a podcast? I don't. I have to listen. I'll have to listen to it back and go, oh.
I'll tell you what I remember most about this week's podcast.
Go on.
It was the silence. I will never forget that at a certain point, very early on in the podcast, while we were talking about the topic of listening, both Roger and I stopped talking, each listening for the other to speak.
I think you would have got very, very, very long odds at a bookie on you and I having a moment of silence between us. I think we could have made a fortune. Somebody had bet on us being quiet. Anyway.
Well, I blame Chris Brogan, actually. I blame Chris Brogan because he put the topic listening out there, and one of the unintended consequences of even saying I'm going to communicate about listening is that people start to behave differently once you mention the word listen.
Sorry, I'm paying attention. It's true. I think people feel suddenly obliged to listen. If you're going to talk, if you're going to be dedicating an entire podcast to listening, then you don't want to be the one talking all the time, almost. Sort of a psychological thing. That would make for a really bad podcast, by the way.
You said something really interesting in that podcast, which we never developed, which was that listening, you said it very early on, which is that listening is not a silent activity. It's not a matter of creating silence.
No, you said that. I was picking up on something you said. You had the point of listening is not inactive. Listening is an active thing, and I merely expanded on that. But the original thought was yours.
It was yours. I heard it from you. I heard it in your company, right? So I heard it in your company. It doesn't matter whose mouth it came out of. I listened to you, and the result was the thought that listening is not a silent activity. So actually that suggests that there are at least two ways of listening. I listen to you when I notice the effect that your words have had on my body.
Okay.
Your words sink in, and they cause me to say something. But who deserves the credit for what I say? I want to credit you, Roger, for having created the circumstance out of which or within which I uttered something. I would not have uttered what I uttered if I hadn't listened to you.
But isn't that the dynamic of a conversation? If you, during the course of a conversation, if at the end of the conversation your level of knowledge, your level of the way you view a topic, if that hasn't changed, then it was either a very poor conversation, or you are completely right and very secure in your knowledge to begin with, or you are just intractable in your views and you refuse to change even in the evidence. Well, it may not even be the evidence, because it might not be that the other person is trying to convince you of something at all. It might just be that in the course of a conversation, you yourself say something based on the way the conversation is built up that makes you realise, well, hang on, that has now made me think differently about something, and my position has now changed or has altered slightly. Or, because it doesn't have to be about, oh, what I believed before is actually wrong now. It can be, what I believed before still holds true, but I have now another layer, another nuance. It isn't black or white, it's now slightly greyer. My understanding has improved, my position has changed, or my position hasn't been enriched by the conversation. And I think if that doesn't happen, it's been a very poor conversation, personally. My end goal would be always to come out of the conversation having learned something from you.
And my impression listening to you there is that you did a lot of thinking on your feet, and you were listening to yourself as you were talking, and you were trying to follow your own logic and see where that would lead you.
I had a conversation with myself.
I think you did, didn't you?
I'm great company, you know, I'm fantastic.
But sometimes I wonder whether you are the kind of person who has it all worked out and who is just then going to utter it, or whether you're the kind of person who experiences yourself working it out as you're speaking it. And I think you probably are a bit of both. My God.
That was the fire.
That was a pistol shot. That
was somebody cracking away.
That was somebody fired at us.
Yes.
I'm going to eat a scone while you're talking.
Well, I will. I'm going to briefly affirm what you said.
You can affirm at length if you want to.
Well, no, because you've just very succinctly captured it correctly. Yes, sometimes while the conversation is going on. It depends. Now, here's the thing. It has to be in a non-hostile environment, by which I mean I am quite prepared to change my opinion on something. Totally prepared. In the face of fact. In the face of a persuasive argument. In the face of a point of view that I had never encountered before. However, if that is presented in an aggressive way, then it will take longer, because I need the space, I need the environment. The environment needs to be right for the information to be digested and processed. So if my conversation partner does it in a very non-threatening way, in a plussing way, which is what you do.
Thank you. You mean I'm not threatening?
Well, you do plussing a lot.
Plussing?
Yes. Plussing.
What's that? Well,
plussing is where, this is what they do at Pixar, the company that makes movies. They have this system of plussing. So, we're in a conversation about the film script, mm-hmm. where the story should go. You give your opinion. Mm-hmm. I am not allowed to say anything negative about what you've just said, regardless of how bad I think the idea is and the storyline that you've developed for a particular character, etc., etc. So, I'm not allowed to say things like but and contradict. I have to say and.
Aha.
Now, by saying and, you're creating a non-hostile environment, so that therefore the person who has just maybe come up with an idea that you don't think is very good, they might actually, having in a non-hostile situation, agree. Because the thing is, and I think this is very important about plussing, is you don't want to shut that person down, because the next idea they may have could be genius and could just wipe away everything that you've come up with and But if you don't allow that person to grow and express themselves, then that could be lost forever. And I'm one of those people who I need, if it's going to be in the conversation, for me to change my mind, it needs to be in a positive kind of frame of mind. Or if it's been a very hostile conversation, it will take me several days to process the information and get to the
point. Did you change your mind at any point during the podcast this morning?
I don't know.
A very leading question.
I don't know. I almost feel I should say yes, but I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't think I did. But maybe change can be so subtle. Here's the thing. Don't they say that isn't it great if you can get somebody to take your viewpoint or get somebody to change their frame of mind or the way they think about something in such a way that they take it as being their own original thought? So maybe I did. Maybe I had a whole sea change in my attitude towards something, but it was so gradual and you so skillfully did it that I didn't notice, and I've taken on board as my own. Anyway, what kind of person are you? Do you change your opinion during conversations?
This morning during the conversation I changed my, not so much my opinion, but I changed my mental model. I'll explain what I mean. At one point in the conversation I said that I didn't really like the word referral. And I started to, waft on at great length about what I did like, describing a process that I'd been involved in the last couple of days. And you brought me rudely down to earth in a very, very clear way, and you said, what you've been talking about is not a referral. You said that you've been talking about relationship building. And then you defined referral for me in a way that actually frames it as being a more restricted activity than I had ever thought about it as. So I think all that time that I was in BNI, I didn't really understand what BNI, all that time that I was visiting BNI, which was very frequently, in a period of time, I don't think I fully understood, because that was because I didn't go on the training that you used to do. You used to provide people with training, so you, of course, you would have been able to put me right 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yes. That said, I don't think what you do is less valid at all. I actually think the way you operate to generate business for other people is an inclusive process, more inclusive. It actually asks a little bit more of the person that you're trying to get business from, because you've now set the groundwork for a relationship to be established between me and the person that you were speaking to over the last couple of days. But I need to do something now. I need to get together with this designer somehow. I don't think it's a lesser way of doing business, or a lesser way of trying to help people, or a lesser way of connecting people, than actually walking up to somebody and saying, with a slip of paper, here's a phone number, call this person, they know all about you and they need your services now and they are ready to buy. That's wonderful when people do that.
Especially if the water is actually coming through my ceiling and I need a plumber, and you can give me a plumber. I don't want to build any relationship. I just want a guy who will stop the leak.
Yeah, and who you're recommending, so therefore I know that I can trust them.
Yeah.
And I think what certainly, here's the thing, I do think that if you are waiting for people to come to you with those slips of paper, with that concrete referral, you are going to lose out. And I think that translates into maybe why people get so frustrated with social media, because they're not spending the time what you preach, which is get to know people. Don't try and get to know tens of thousands of people. Get to know five people. Get to know two people. Get to know one person. Get to know them really well, and they will help you better than 1,000 people could ever, who you've never really had any kind of a proper interaction with.
God, you started off playing the saxophone very nicely, and you then picked up a coronet and took the music in another direction.
And I'm the bass.
Well, you might be a bass, but you're actually capable of playing several musical instruments, in my experience.
You didn't answer the question, actually. I do want to hear what kind of thinker you are, what kind of conversationalist you are. How do you travel through conversations, and what's your process for changing your mind, if at all?
Well, there are about three questions in what you just said, right? And that's the way I am. I am an absolutely obsessive listener, right? So I notice, I've practiced listening to other people a lot. So that's why I will immediately alert myself to the fact that there are three. I'm not sure which of those questions to ask. You know? So, but I'm clear that there's distinctions in there, which means that it isn't just a question you're asking, it is a topic you're opening up. So tell me, what precise question would you like me to answer? And I will answer it dead straight, I promise.
What's the best way to get Paul in mind to change his mind on something?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've changed my mind a lot of times. One is, I'll give you a concrete example. Chris Brogan put forward an idea, which was that he suggested that it would be a good thing for people to read three books in 2013. And the first time I read it, I thought, impossible. I need to read, 103 books in 2013, and I could not possibly go down the road of the three-book diet, read three books. Somehow or other, my mind was changed. Somehow or other, I changed my mind to reframe it, but said, well, I could go for Chris Brogan's idea if I was allowed to join that movement by adopting three books that I would major on, and I could dabble around in all the others as well, but I would actually return to three books all the time. So I then thought Chris Brogan's come up with a brilliant idea. So first of all, I thought Chris Brogan came up with a crazy idea that no right-minded person would do, and now I think Chris Brogan's come up with a brilliant idea. So how did I change my mind from one to the other, right? The way I changed my mind was, one, by exploring. Get me to explore a topic. That's the best way to get me to change my mind. I suppose I genuinely think nobody else ever changes my mind. I change my own mind. But it is what other people do for me is they create a situation within which I am able to change my mind. And that connects in my mind with your point about creating a secure and a friendly environment for change to take place rather than adversarial. I can be very obstinate. I cling tenaciously to ideas that I'm familiar with. I don't quickly change my mind on things, but I do change my mind substantially.
On the book thing, that's interesting given the conversation we just had in the podcast proper, where Chris is faced with an audience occasionally where people aren't buying into what he's saying. And I wonder if, had you been in the audience where he was presenting the three book diet for 2013, and whether if your hand had shot up, and whether if he'd said to you, "Now, are you going to buy into this? For what are you going to do this?" I wonder whether his answer to you would have been, "But of course you can read other books, and I've miscommunicated this to you. What I'm suggesting is this." I wonder if, in fact, you've done Chris's job for him almost in your mind by saying, okay, can I accommodate this in some way? How can I accommodate this into the way that I feel?
I want to bring AJ Lehan into this conversation, right? Because he recently wrote a blog post which I think of as a tremendous case for how important it is to reframe something, right? Reframe it. Turn it in, make it your own, right? This is not about following Chris Brogan or anything like that. What I've done is I have reframed Chris Brogan's idea about the three-book diet to suit me. Now, I do not know for sure whether Chris Brogan always meant the same thing as I believe, right, that I'm keen on. I am going to go for three books next year. I am going to go for the impact equation, number one. The second book I'm going to go for is the mindful way, mindful approach to depression. And the third book is going to be On Brands by Wally Owens. Right? They're the three books I'm going to go for next year. As we end this particular one, Roger, are you in the three-book diet next year?
I am.
Give me one of your books.
The Impact Equation.
Give me another book.
Good to great. No, great by choice.
That's it.